Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome, and thank you for your support, Patreonistas.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And as the cold winter nights are drawing in, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Depending on when you're listening to this.
Depending on when you're listening. And where.
Or which hemisphere you are.
It's hemispheric. It's hemispheric dependent, isn't it? Temporo-hemispherically. But to the nearest, basically, it's true to the nearest hemisphere and 6 months. That's the margin of error. But they are a drawing in, aren't they?
They are a drawing in
if they are. Aren't they? But they might not be. They might be drawing out.
And seeing as they might be.
What better way to keep your little psychological tootsies warm than by wrapping them in the metaphorical special gift socks you got given 2 years ago for Christmas? Haven't worn them since because you thought they were too thick to wear with a shoe. Mm-hmm. And you're not used to wearing slippers around the house.
Your feet have withered since.
Your feet have undergone the foot withering, which we all, in a way, go through, don't we? By which we measure our lives.
Sliding around your trainers.
So you do need a thicker sock now.
Sorry, Henry, can I just take you back a couple of clicks?
Yeah.
Were you promising some kind of psychological benefit from listening to this?
Well, it's like a sort of it was like a warm pair of socks potentially to wear around your metaphorical, well, your psychological feet. with metaphorical socks. Well, what better to put on psychological feet than metaphorical socks?
We will get you to psychological room temperature.
That's what we promise. Yeah. Of course, it doesn't specify the room, does it?
What room is... That might not be a comfortable temperature for you.
It's a meat locker.
It's a meat locker. The kind favoured by big mafia bosses when they're... To hide the body of an accountant that's let them down.
Yeah, you've already noticed that next to that upside down goat is the loan shark who gave you a bit of information last week.
That's right.
He's been here at least a few days,
but he's not decaying because that meat locker is kept at a cool -4 degrees, isn't it?
Anyway, I'm a bit lost in this metaphor.
I've lost it completely. Yeah,
yeah,
it's gone.
But thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. And in the first week, we discussed adverts, amongst other things, didn't we?
We did. I mean, normally we find a sort of a punny way to get into the...
Yeah. That was like a pole vault. So we just walked up the pole vault, just put the stick down and went, I'm going, just walked straight down the tunnel.
Oh, right, I see. I thought we were going to try and find a way through the meat-based metaphor, the air conditioning unit metaphor or whatever it was.
You thought that was our way to adverts?
Into adverts. Somehow.
That wasn't... tricky. Mm. Well, I don't think we can... Oh, I think that's going to be hard. You know, famous advertising slogans include...
To all beef patties.
Other ones include... Ooh, just reach out and take it.
What's that?
That's M&S from the. That's,
that was really unpleasant.
That was M&S from the '80s, probably.
Was it
something like that? No, I don't know. Yeah, really great socks. That's Adidas, isn't it?
And Kenko as well.
And Kenko. Three stirs, and you're ready for the day.
Hyundai i10.
That's Hyundai i10. But yeah,
well, you've got a real. I could throw any project at you, Henry, and you could just come up with an advert.
Yeah, well, I've got the voice. It's all about the voice, really.
Okay, here goes. A mini sort of conifer.
My aren't your children growing up fast? But they're probably not. Hang on, They're not growing up that fast. Oh no, sorry, I got mixed up because of the miniature conifer they were standing next to. Miniature conifers, always with you, unlike your children who will eventually leave.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's good. It's pithy, it gets a lot across, doesn't it?
It's a manipulative, but often ads are.
Mike, do you have a product to throw at Henry?
Raspberry flavoured sugar free gum.
Three chews, and you're ready to snog 4 or 5 different people if you have a really great night out tonight. Go for it. It's 1987.
clock is ticking.
But the clock's ticking.
You're going to have to change your behaviours pretty soon. What about floss?
Ram it, cram it. Now get your tongue down someone's gob.
It's 1987.
It's 1987. And you're flossing. You're flossing with the best of them. Colgate floss. Yeah?
Yeah, the advert, I can imagine, if it's floss with the best of them, you've got a length of floss that you're flossing.
Yeah.
Then the camera pans along the floss.
Yeah.
And at the other end, it's Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. Oh, Ronald Reagan, yeah.
Well, I was thinking if it was the 70s, it would be like, it would go, it'd be like, oh, be through the mouth of a sort of buxom, you know, attractive lady. Like, oh, through the mouth of another one. Oh, oh. And then through the mouth of like a sort of decrepit old granny. Oh,
nice.
Then it would carry along a bit and then it would go through like up the arse of a poodle and out of its mouth.
Yeah. Yes, of course.
And it'd be like, for any quirk of taste, Colgate floss. How about this? Globules of slightly glistening meat.
Mm.
Sausages.
Perfect.
That's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
Anyway, here's more stuff from our episode about adverts. Okay, I found a list of all of the John Lewis Christmas adverts.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
Okay.
The Journey, which had the breathy version of the song The Power of Love.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, I remember that now. Yeah, the breathy.
Yep. Which is a snowman's heroic journey to buy his snow wife a gift. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that one? I remember that one. He goes on a big journey.
Well, yeah.
I don't know when he gets her.
Oh, wasn't it a twist at the end? It was a hairdryer and he's killing her to get the inheritance. That was one which had a twist.
The carrot inheritance.
Yeah.
Your carrot is mine. I will have two noses.
Or one nose and one dick that looks like my nose.
And they'll be queuing round the block.
Oh, yeah.
Then in 2013, there was The Bear and the Hare.
Was that animated?
Yeah, it was hand-drawn.
Hand-drawn style animation. What happened in that one?
As the other woodland animals decorate the tree and wrap presents, the bear snoozes in its cave, waking on Christmas morning to the delight of its long-eared companion.
Which it would have then have eaten. So again there's very much a sense that... Yeah.
It stops at the right time.
Well, there's something for the mums and dads, isn't there? This is implicit gore or sexual tension, whatever it may be. Yeah.
But also suggests to me that actually what these things are doing is lying to us about reality, because the reality is that hare is... It's not even toast, because at least toast is treated with some respect. So that hare is... Do you know what I mean? It's just disposed of within seconds by that bear.
That snowman might not have even been married at all. Yeah.
You're right. He might have been married, but to a different snow woman.
2014. This is my favourite one. And for some reason, I find it highly emotional. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Monty the Penguin.
Ah, yes.
So what happened in that one?
A boy's beloved pet penguin begins to wonder about finding a mate, watching romantic movies and wistfully gazing at people kissing on benches. The boy's solution? A mail-order bride for Monty, who turns out just to be a cuddly toy and part of the boy's imagination.
So he's essentially bought it a sex doll.
It was a human trafficking Christmas story.
Second, are we saying that his actual pet penguin was a penguin, but the thing he bought was a toy?
No, it turns out at the end that I think that both the pet penguin and the toy were both
sex toys. But it's funny, isn't it? What happens is the emotional message is purchase.
Well, that's advertising, right?
Love equals purchase. The love moment is the purchase moment.
2015, The Man on the Moon.
Yeah, bit weird. Less said about that, the better. Yeah.
Why has he been exiled to the moon? That's the big hanging question, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's serious, isn't it? Whatever it is, it's serious.
It's Napoleon level stuff.
Yeah, he's tried to invade Russia, minimum.
2016. I didn't like this one at all. Buster the Boxer.
What was that one?
This ad was played for laughs, not tears. That's where they went wrong. As Buster the Dog frustratedly watched foxes, badgers, hedgehogs and squirrels bounce on a recently assembled trampoline in the garden on Christmas Eve. The next morning, Buster barges past the little girl whose Christmas present it really is, and the joy on his face as he finally gets his turn to bounce is unforgettable.
What's the message there?
Every man for himself, sort of quite individualistic. You know, if you want it, get it, get it. Never mind the little girl. You're a predator, right? You're an apex predator. Get out there.
2017. Moz the Monster. In this advert, a young boy makes friends with Moz the monster under his bed. Nocturnal adventures leave the kid sleep-deprived until the gift of a nightlight snuffs out Moz. Disaster! Happily, with a click of a switch, he can be reanimated. I don't remember that one particularly.
Who'd have thought it? The solution to everything in this kid's emotional life was a purchase. Purchase the light. No, don't have to spend more time with him, no. If I have anything, spend less time with him, just as long as he purchased the light. Yeah.
2018, The Boy and the Piano. National Treasure Sir Elton John is celebrated in an advert that traces his life.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Set to the soundtrack of Your Song, we rewind through stadium performances, private jets and recording studios to early gigs until we reach boyhood, when a young Elton comes down the stairs on Christmas morning to unwrap a gift to us all.
It has been purchased.
The piano had purchased. Set off his
All of those discos, all of those concerts, those happy memories with Elton John in the background, they're all because of a purchase.
It's quite... That is a good ad, I think. It's quite clever. It's quite sort of it works. It's very clever, but it is quite cynical, because it's basically playing on the guilt of parents. It's saying, if you don't purchase for your son or daughter this year, they might not become Elton John. And imagine if Sir Elton John wasn't Sir Elton John, who would he be?
I think it probably also led to a lot of bollockings for children who just weren't doing their piano practice as well at the same time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
We went to all that trouble. We bought you a piano.
And why aren't you Elton John yet?
Aren't you Elton John? Exactly.
Can I return this piano to John Lewis if you don't become Elton John? What's the refund situation here? Yeah.
2019. Edgar the Dragon. This was bollocks.
Yes, this was
adorable
bollocks.
Village dragon Edgar can't control his excited fire breathing, melting a snowman and an ice rink before torturing the village Christmas tree. He shuts himself away in shame, but a young girl wins him over with a simple gift. A Christmas pudding, which Edgar lights for the villagers on Christmas Day.
Purchased pudding. It's kind of, I think you kind of, the trouble with that one is, I remember, is you kind of see where it's going a bit. What's good about the Elton John one was they completely changed the format somehow. But that one, there's a kind of maths equation to it now. You go, girl, cute dragon. Mm-hmm. The dragon does a thing that is always bad. The solution to it is to light the pudding. I remember thinking this feels too neat. He's lighting the pudding, but we've suggested.
But then what? Then
exactly.
What, guys?
Then what? Is he going to be lighting the lasagna next week? We're into the new year now. Is he going to be lighting the roast lamb? Lighting nachos?
Do we lock him away for 364 days now?
In which case, when he comes out the other end, he's going to be a troubled. He's going to be a troubled dragon. Also, you can just set fire to it. It's much easier to set fire to pudding just using matches.
Considerably safer.
So much safer.
Yeah, right. They should just execute the dragon.
I think heroically execute the dragon with a purchased steak knife set. Everyone in the village can have a stab.
Yeah. 2020, give a little love. See, this is what I don't remember this one at all. 8 random acts of kindness unfold in this live-action and animated advert, which chimed with the national mood as we hunkered down for a lockdown Christmas.
But a lot of people tried to get sort of maudlin things out of lockdown scenarios, and most failed.
8 different versions of it. Should we watch it now? Should we just watch it or not bother?
Watch all 8 of them.
Is that good pod? That's not good pod. All right, Karen.
2021, unexpected guest. Romance returns in this advert, which sees an alien crash land on Earth and fall for the boy who teaches her all about Christmas. With his light-up jumper handed over as a gift before she returns to her planet, Nathan, the human, is given his first kiss.
From an alien? That's a bit weird. Also, I think it's been proved now, logically, if you just think about it for long enough, that if aliens did come to Earth, they would destroy mankind instantly. Be the only rational move. For them to make.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's because of...
They want the lithium.
And we're now lithium ready as a civilization, aren't we? We've all got lithium on us. I mean, I've got a couple of pouches of lithium in the fridge right now. But we've all got lithium, haven't we? We've all got lithium in our contraptions and stuff.
Mm.
So I think, yeah, again, it's just not really credible.
2022 was the skateboarding one.
Mm-hmm. So good.
Which was... So good. And it was to draw attention to the John Lewis good. Building Happier Futures program, which supports care experienced people. And that was a brilliant one.
Yeah. Centered around the purchase of a skateboard. Was it? Sort of.
Nah, I don't know if you can buy a skateboard from John Lewis.
Of course you can. Of course you can.
Of course you can. And also, whatever John Lewis do, in any way, whatever it is, purchasing is in their blood. It is their blood. It's the veins and the blood of John Lewis is purchasing. So you can't get away from that.
What has four sides and a big prick at the top? No, it's not Mike's house. It's the pyramids. Is that acceptable?
It was quite good. It sort of suggests that I am perennially fixing the TV aerial.
Yeah, you're constantly on the roof. Yeah, I forgot to mention that.
That's the one bit about that bit that doesn't push. Well, that's why it's not you, it's the pyramids, because you're not always on the roof.
I'm not.
Sometimes with Mike's house, it's four sides and the pricks at the bottom or in the middle or just outside. Isn't it? Whereas with the pyramids, it's always at the top. And that's the main difference. By the way, you know, there's often people talk about the mystery of how they made the pyramids. Yeah, how did they get so many people to put so many bricks up in that, you know, and make those bloody pyramids? I think the truth, actually, I've recently read in some research that came across, is that actually what happened was they told people, if you put one brick on the pyramid and persuade four other people to put bricks around it, you get a free iron tie. And then so that a lot of people did it thinking they'd get a free Hyundai, but of course Hyundais weren't invented for another 200 years. Were they?
And the first car stereo was just a sort of a eunuch minstrel, wasn't it?
That's right.
Wedged into the dashboard.
And that's why the glove compartment, we still use the phrase glove compartment, because the glove was the glove that you used to yank his balls off in the first place, wasn't it, to make him a eunuch?
Which was known as tuning the radio.
That's right. Pretty hard to tune it back, though. You can only reach a sort of one-way tune, wasn't it?
Anyway, here's more stuff from our episode about the pyramids.
Yes, please.
I think because we've been reading out quite a lot of switcheroos.
Oh, right. Yeah.
We've had a lot of the old switcheroos. Mm. But this one's slightly different.
Hello.
So this is from George.
Thank you, George.
So it's about the highest altitude listener of this podcast. Now, I can't remember what the record is. I think it's Everest Base Camp. I think.
Yes, I think you might be right.
Aeroplanes don't count.
No, we've had a few emails saying they listen to airplanes. I do not read those out.
Yeah, yeah.
Chances.
Yeah.
Anyway, George says he reckons he can beat Everest Base Camp. I'm currently travelling in Bolivia, and the other day I decided to climb Huayna Potosí. Mm-hmm. Oh, pronounced. He's helpfully had the pronunciation. Huayna Potosí. I wasn't far off. We woke up at 11:30 p.m. and began the ascent at 12:30 a.m., reaching the summit in time for sunrise at 5:45 a.m.
Whoa, 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 whoa. He got up at 11:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. Started climbing at 12:30 a.m.
Yeah.
The next one.
What did he do for an hour?
He made those Marco Pierre white scrambled eggs.
Okay. Also, can I just to be clear for everyone, you were starting measurement at Earth surface, which is either, you can either measure that, so sea level, Or ground level, isn't it? The ground level is just very, very slightly above sea level, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not.
Ground level goes all the way to the top of Everest, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's a trouble.
So what is ground level? It's a meaningless concept, really. Sea level is the only level that really makes a difference to anything.
Yeah,
I think everyone implicitly understands
that. So we're starting at sea level?
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Reaching the summit in time for sunrise at 5:45 a.m.
Sunrise over what?
Sea level.
Which sun?
Yeah, but over the rim of the earth or over whatever mountains happen to be in the area? I mean, yeah, you know, sun level. What's that?
The earth doesn't have like a separate rim. The earth is just the earth.
Okay, fine. It's just that it rises over whatever happens to be around you, doesn't it? If you're lying on the floor and you've got a box of shredded wheat in front of your head.
Yeah, it rises over that. Yeah.
So it's all relative, this stuff.
Yeah.
But carry on anyway. Fine.
So you can delay dawn by just pressing your face up against a table, for example.
Exactly. Yeah.
It was here at the height of 6,088 metres. I wonder if there's someone out there who knows if he's got the record or not. I don't know. I should have been keeping a record. Mm-hmm. that I listened to the introduction of the Mushrooms episode before beginning the descent. And let me tell you, if you want a grueling experience which is guaranteed to give you a headache, might make you sick, will upset your stomach, will leave you exhausted, and will leave you questioning your sanity, then I'd recommend climbing Huayna Potosí. But I actually really like the pod and don't think it does any of these things.
Very good.
It's double, switcheroo.
Double switcheroo. He's re-switched it.
He switched the roux.
It's an aroo.
It's an aroo. That's like an owl. You think its head is facing the other way from its body. But it's not. It's a body that's facing the other way from its head. It's like, it's a completely different, it's a different dimension of switch from what you had in mind. Very good. You know what? I think we're ready for that as a culture. I was actually hoping it was going to go that way because it's about double bluffing, isn't it? Essentially, that is the new switcheroo is that because it's changing your expectations.
You think it's a switcheroo and it's not.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
But then, what's next? Well, we'll see.
I mean, and also, one might argue, who gives a shit? Yeah, in a deeper sense. But let's see.
Either way, George has he's changed the nature of the game.
George, you've done really well. Also, by the way, because it's a different situation, he has to send us a badge. So,
yeah.
Up yours.
Up yours, George.
Also, you don't have to send it because we didn't send it.
He sent us a photograph, which I've just shared with you, of him on the... And fair play, the sunset over the shredded wheat box does look...
Can I say, that is the exact colour of sunset that happens in the pension ads.
It is. Yes.
It's the golden glow. Oh, look, well done. Blimey, he's done really well there, hasn't he, to get up that. Blimmin' heck. He's above the clouds. And below other clouds. There's another cloud layer above the clouds. Brilliant.
That's really good stuff.
Amazing. Thanks, George.
Finally, email from Dermot. Dear Beans, I would like to bring your attention to someone called Mr. Bean Beanland, a director with the Heat Pump Foundation in the UK.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's got waxwork from the eyes up.
Let's be kind about Mr. Beanland.
Sorry, Beanland. I think he's had a lot of makeup and stuff for this photo shoot, which is
the photograph is
giving him a slightly odd patina to his face. Yeah,
yeah, but. What extraordinary decision for Mr. and Mrs. Beanland to call their son Bean.
Oh, he's called Bean Beanland. Bean Beanland.
Are we confident it is the name, isn't it?
But he's done very well. He's become the Director for Growth and External Affairs of a Heat Pump Federation.
Federation?
Federation.
What is a Heat Pump Federation? It's got an exhibit. Why exhibit?
Also, what is a heat pump?
Isn't that the future
of heating?
15 years of sector experience, including 8 years with an installation contractor in energy and carbon mitigation and in conceptual technology selection, procurement and the installation of mechanical services and renewable technologies.
Never knowingly underheated.
I feel like this whole thing might be AI. AI. His job is an AI. The website was created by an AI, and I don't know why. None of it feels very real.
Oh, there is a section on AI on the website. And it says, how will AI transform my job? Will solar and PV emerge to become the dominant next trend that we need to keep an eye on? Or are heat pumps the solution to a more sustainable future? That's what they've got to say about AI. It ends in a question mark, crucially.
This feels like if you were a robot trying to create a human to convince people you're human. It's Bean Beanland.
Yes, Bean Beanland. I mean, at the moment, AI isn't... That's where they've slipped.
That's the tale, isn't it? That's the tale, is Bean Beanland. Because I think the AI, you can see the logic of the robot has thought, well, the fact is, to not be called Bean Beanland would suggest a degree of pre-planning. Like to be called John Beanland, for example, whereas actually real life is much more chaotic than that and people are more irrational. So actually
introduce
the chaos factor.
The caprice of human baby name decision making.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's rolled the dice.
You wouldn't make it up, Bean Beanland.
You couldn't make it up. We have made it up, but you couldn't make it up. But we have made it up.
Well, we made up something that you couldn't make up.
But There's also, whatever it is, and whatever Bean Bean it is, there's also, there's some clues in the about section as well, because I think it's about heating. And they've got sections like sustainability, contact us, our partners, but there's also book accommodation. I mean, what do you mean?
What? So it's a hotel and a heating solution.
And a man called Bean Bean.
We don't know. They've just, I think they've just thought generally we can see often there's book accommodation in these bits. So let's just sling it in.
Can you stay within Bean Beanland?
Well, I think staying within Bean Beanland, that's the kind of presidential suite. Is to stay inside Bean Beanland himself and have a holiday in Bean Beanland.
But also there's a picture here. If you look at emerging trends section, it shows you who the creature is that's behind all of this, actually.
Which section's that in?
Oh.
It's just a matrix of light.
Where's that?
Perfect spinning orb.
Where do I find that bit?
In emerging trends, which is in the subsection Why Visit?
Why Visit?
At the bottom of Why Visit.
Yes, it's just a glowing orb of vectors. It's sheer AI, that, isn't it? It's the center. It's simply ones and zeros.
There are a couple of fingers. There's the withered human finger of God.
That's
and
right.
The strong robo finger.
There's a robo finger
of robo God.
So it's a version of Sistine Chapel ceiling. Is it?
So yeah.
Of the
as reimagined
with a robo kind of
GPT. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bean Beanland lives on his back.
Bean Beanland. Let yourself
Bean
go.
Beanland, ruler of the earth. Bean
Beanland. I think we're all going to become parts of, sort of absorbed into the Bean Beanland, aren't we? I think you stay in him, you just become part of him.
Yeah.
And the more people that get into him, the more realistic he'll look.
The bigger Beanland is.
The bigger Beanland is. Yeah, so we talked about sharks, didn't we?
We did.
Now, people often say certain facts about sharks, don't they? For example, the fact that they don't have any bones, or the fact that most sharks have good eyesight.
And they can only sting once.
They can only sting once. But they absolutely ruin a picnic, don't they? You think you've set up your picnic perfect. Bloody sharks come along, ruin it.
You've sunk your picnic cage. Down you've all gone in your picnic cage.
Yeah.
It's not ready shark-proof, is it?
Bloody not really shark-proofed it properly.
Made of bamboo.
You know what they say about sharks, don't they? They say sharks have to keep moving. Otherwise they'll... Or no, they can't fall asleep.
Mm-hmm. Because they keep moving.
Because
they can't get to
sleep. Keep moving. But I tell you what, you won't be falling asleep if you've listened to this extra stuff that we did about sharks.
Unless you use the podcast as a sleep aid.
Which a lot of people do.
Yeah. It's either that or breastfeeding.
We've seen people use breastfeeding as a sleep aid. That's a lot of effort to go through for a sleep aid, mate.
Well, babies do, yeah.
A lot of babies do that already.
Mm. Well, they use breastfeeding as a sleep aid.
Yeah, sure. Wake up, have a little snack, go back to sleep again.
So sometimes someone will be breastfeeding a baby. The baby will be using breastfeeding as a sleep aid, and the person doing the breastfeeding will be using 3 minutes hours as a sleep aid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Audio breastfeeding.
If you like your breast milk lukewarm. Of oviviparous shark pups depend on yolk for nutrition, and when an embryo has expended its own yolk sac, it turns to the eggs around it. Some species practice intrauterine cannibalism, or eating the other fertilized or unfertilized eggs in the womb. The best known intrauterine cannibal is the sand tiger shark. Baby shark, I ate my brother. Baby shark, I ate my sister. Baby shark, I ate my brother and my sister too.
Evil shark,
shark, evil shark, evil shark, evil sharks.
I think I've mentioned this before, but for some reason, my Facebook is like the algorithm thinks I'm obsessed with fish and fishermen and people catching things. Very often I'll be watching videos of people slicing open fish.
Yeah.
And I get quite freaked out by the way that sometimes they're just totally full of eggs, but like almost the whole of the inside is full of eggs. And it doesn't seem to be in like a special
bit. Is
that
their own eggs or they've eaten eggs? What do you mean? Their own eggs?
Yeah, they are going to spawn or whatever.
Are you worried that the same is happening to you, that you're currently full of eggs?
What it
do you
is,
wake up someday just feeling like you're just full of soft eggs?
I feel like in my body, it's all quite discreet, right? There's bits, okay?
Mm. Yeah.
Lungs, liver, spiral valve, anus, cloaca. Like, I know what everything is, and I know where everything is, right?
Yeah. You do have a cloaca, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I got that done over the summer.
Yeah. Well, you went to Turkey, didn't you?
Yeah.
Because you can get a really... The deals are superb on cloacas, aren't they? And the advantage of that is you now, rather than defecating and urinating separately, you create a kind of mulch, don't you, which permanently...
A continuous mulch.
You finally produce a continuous mulch, which is also great if you get lost, isn't it? You basically can't get lost now because there's so many swarms of flies following you around that you always know where you are.
My feeling is, in my body, right, there's no gaps, is there? There's just stuff going on everywhere. Okay.
There shouldn't be air bubbles now.
You don't feel you've got hosting space?
Well, when they slice open a fish, there's just a sort of void that sometimes is full of eggs. Mm. It freaks me out.
Because it's a female fish and it's got a womb, which is something you probably don't
have. But it hasn't got a womb. It's literally got eggs everywhere. You just open it up and there's just eggs everywhere. Don't like it.
That's pretty weird. I've had a few strange train incidents lately.
Okay.
Train incident number two, where similarly I came across as a prick, even though I'm not one. This was one where I was on a train on the way to the Hay Festival in Wales. Mm-hmm. Opposite me, there was sat two like a nice looking couple in their 30s. Guy had a beard and a kind of Hawaiian shirt, quite a cool looking guy. His partner, I took to be his partner, was knitting in that sort of cool way that people knit. Mm-hmm. And I was just quite tired, and I was yawning quite a lot. Mm. And the bloke suddenly just looked me in the face and went, "Can you please stop yawning? That's actually really rude."
No.
What?
Yes. I think he might have said, "Can you please stop yawning like that? It's very rude."
were you staring them in the eye? Was
I flick the finger when I yawn. I can't
see you doing flick the finger.
I do. I automatically
really fixed eye contact, and it goes on.
I really fixed eye contact
for a good 7 or 8 minutes. I seem to recall.
It does. Yeah. 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 So it is quite an aggressive move. Yeah, no, so that was really awkward because it was so...
He sounds like he's got a little bit of low self-esteem going on, doesn't he?
Maybe. It was so confrontational.
Yeah, he's in the wrong.
So I think so. So here's what happened, right? So he was so aggressive that it was really... It just took me by surprise. But I sat there and I was like, okay, so what's gone on here?
Mm.
I was trying to work out what's happened. So the first thing I there was a little pause of a minute or two, and then I said, and then what I said to him was, "Is it because of infection?"
Mm-hmm.
That was my question.
Hmm.
Is that, which maybe was quite a weird question.
And what was his response?
I thought it was something to do with. Is it something to do with like a COVID hangover?
So you
thing
weren't covering your mouth or anything.
I think I probably wasn't. I probably wasn't covering my mouth, Mike. I wasn't covering my mouth. I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can't remember what he said to that. I think he just said, "No, it's just rude" or something. Anyway, I then sat there and because I couldn't work out what to do, I had quite a lot of adrenaline going. I Googled, "Is yawning rude?" Because I couldn't remember. I
currently feel a bit like I'm not sure as well. Now you've brought it up.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't sure. Is yawning rude? It feels like I thought. Obviously, yawning's rude if you're talking to someone. Because you're expressing boredom.
Yeah.
But if you're not talking to them, you've got to be pretty sensitive if you...
Yeah, like, was he thinking like, "Oh, you're pretty bored of watching my wife do her knitting, are you?"
Yeah, or is she not knitting hard enough for you? What do you want her to knit? Do you want her to knit like a jersey with three sleeves? It's never been knitted before. She just knits standard clothes. Is that not good enough? Yeah? I tell you what, Susan, knit a fist. We're going to punch him to death with a fist. Knit a fist. It's going to take ages. How long are you on the train for? So I Googled it, and obviously it is rude if you don't cover your, you know, it is theoretically rude if you don't cover, but it's not something that's been drilled into me for some reason.
No,
now.
I know that.
What is Reddit? Did Reddit have any strong opinions on this?
I know that picking your nose is rude.
He might have been live writing on Reddit, you know, as you were Googling. You might have been able to watch a live account of why it was rude.
I probably could have seen his reaction to me live. That would have been quite good. So what I did, but then I thought to myself, I suppose it is... I think I've got a bit of a hippo yawn, maybe, do I? Like the whole head kind of hinges
so
back.
So you're getting on all fours on the table?
Of course I'm. Okay. A hippo. Yeah.
Okay.
Arching your back.
Arching my back.
Mouth full of dead baby crocodile swelling around.
Yeah. And sometimes, because of the way I sort of arch my back, my buttock cheeks will slightly part and revealing the hundreds of little birds that live in there. Pecking away at the detritus.
Your sleek, glossy ass.
My sleek, glossy ass.
I think, to be honest, Henry, everyone yawns like that. You can't do a small, polite yawn. It's not how it works.
How much? What was the frequency of the yawn?
I was just like, as frequently as I yawn when I'm knackered. I think it was one of these things where it probably... I did it again and again and again. Eventually, he was like, I'm sick of looking down this guy's throat.
Mm.
But at the same time, anyway, I Googled it. I suppose you're supposed to cover your mouth. I hadn't really thought of that. Yeah, that felt a bit rude. That does feel a bit rude.
You fucking bastards.
One thing I've noticed is that as I get older, more and more, my yawns definitely get louder.
Mm.
I feel like as a young man, I would be relatively silent, whereas now it's very much a...
Yeah.
Mm. You sort of need them. They're like a stretch.
Yeah. They kind of power...
It's a more active process.
I think it's powering yourself up again, isn't it? I think your body's sort of going, I think we've done what we needed to do. I think it's time to get the hell out of town. Do you know what I mean? I think you're probably sort of bringing yourself back to life to a degree. But anyway, so I Googled it, and what I did was eventually, so like... 15, 20 minutes passed. It was incredibly awkward. And eventually I said, I apologize. I should have covered my mouth. Mm. And he did that thing of going, oh, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, like that. But later on, I was kind of a bit angry with myself that I hadn't kicked off more. But obviously kicking off more was never the right thing to do. So it was the right thing.
I think you were dealing with an arch twat.
I think I was. Maybe I was, yeah.
And there's no winning with an arch twat.
There's no winning. There's no winning.
Because, he's not going to show contrition.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? It's not going to turn into one of those lovely, how did you become best friends? Actually.
He won't believe this.
Very nearly. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was never going to go that way.
I once had a horrible train experience where a guy got on. Oh, God, it was so awful. Really busy train, sat on a four round a table. I've got a booked seat.
Yeah.
Some people get on and they go, oh, we haven't booked a seat, but we're just going to sit here. And I was like, well, that's okay. The two people that got on to finish the four were a man and his son.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say his son was nine.
Yeah. So which of the four, are you aisle or window?
I'm window.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Man and son get on.
Opposite me is a woman who's sat there. And then man and son get on and they sort of finish the four.
Mm-hmm.
Then at the next stop, loads of people get on.
Yeah.
Including someone who's clearly got the book ticket for where the little kid is sat. But she's doing the kind of, she's a bit dithery and she's going, I think I've gone.
She's creating a fluster space. Mm-hmm. Within the fluster space, moral decisions can be made by people in the area. It's an invitation for heroism to step forth, potentially.
Yeah. So she's going, oh, I've got seat. And she's reading out the number of it.
Mm.
And it's the seat with the kid in.
Yeah.
So I just go, oh, it's this one.
Mm.
And so... the kid gets up, she sits down.
Mm.
Then the dad of the kid looks at me for the next 2 hours as if he wants to murder.
Oh, my God.
And then he ends up standing up as well. And then they're just stood in the aisle.
Why has he stood up? To be with his son?
Yeah, I think so. And someone else got on, I think, maybe onto his seat. And he's livid.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm sitting there doing the same thing as you, going, all right, okay, did I do anything wrong? Like, was I meant to, blah, 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 you know? And then he just keeps looking at me to the extent where I had to say, Is everything okay?
Hmm.
And he was like, no, everything's fine. Yeah.
Of course, yeah. Well, that's the British. I mean, that's the British.
And then he starts saying to his son, this guy thinks he's the king of his castle and stuff like this, God. Like weird little phrases to his son. And his son was just obviously wanting his dad to shut up.
Yeah.
And his dad just kept staring at me and I kept saying, is everything okay?
Brilliant.
And then he's kept going, yeah, well. You know,
yeah. Enjoy your turrets.
Some of us think we're in charge.
My liege.
Yeah.
This guy's enjoying his turrets. No, everything's fine. Yeah. 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 No, yeah, no, no, everything's fine. This guy's wife probably has a conical, one of those conical sort of hats with a little hanky hanging off the end, isn't he? No, you're fine. Yeah. Yeah.
And like you, Henry, I was thrown into this weird thing of going, did I just do something wrong? And I was working out the morality of it. I did was show a woman where her pre-booked seat was. But then there was a child in it, but then kids can stand, can't they? Is that
also you went with the law of the land, whereas he thought there was kind of implicit agreement between you to break the law of the land in favor of
his precious progeny, his firstborn.
Yeah.
His heir.
He was actually behaving like a medieval king, probably more than you were, actually.
But Mike, you've had a 9-year-old in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, am I meant to let this kid sit there?
No, the 9-year-old, if it's like a baby in arms.
Yeah.
Or a tiny, do you know what I mean? Fair play. You've rescued a woman who's got some sort of crippling social anxiety thing going on, who doesn't want to. Whoa. That was a person who needed someone else to say, it's okay. You've booked your seat, sit down.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was doing. I was going, it's here. Like, don't worry about it. But then.
But all you did, Ben, was share information. You informed the group. But that was taken as making the moral decision, which it wasn't. It was just, you were just informing.
Yes.
If there'd been some reason why a kid really needed a seat, then, you know, that would be obvious and would present itself. But a 9-year-old kid, I mean, they can sit in the luggage rack. Yes. Do you know what I mean? I mean, they're fine.
They can fit in the bin section if it's only half full of crisp packets.
You can fit in the bin section, lock them in the toilets.
There's all kinds of options.
Bring a clothes peg, peg it up to the side of the window. Do you know what I mean?
They're very flexible.
Yeah.
I do really wonder that sometimes about, so in terms of like train seat ethics. I do want. I really have a wonder about families and children, which is, do you give up your seat for a child genuinely? Because surely a child is better than you at not being in a seat, because it's a child. They're a child. They're really young. They're fine. Do you know what I mean?
They're going to start clambering over.
They're going to waste it.
But
also, they're young. They're super. So in general, if there's an age curve which goes from
from young to old.
if there is an age curve which goes from young to old, it's generally the older you get, the more you give someone a seat. But then the other direction, you know, the younger you are, the more you give up your seat. But until you're really young, and then do you need the seat again? Do you know?
Yeah, I think that's about right. Yeah, I think genuinely, if you're like they're so tiny that the person with them needs to be bringing huge amounts of kit, special foods and stuff to clean up turds and all that, then like, you know, come on, fair play. But what he's doing, he's weaponizing his child.
Ben's case.
Yeah.
I think he was probably just a bit of a psycho, full stop.
He can get stuffed, yeah.
While we're talking about sharks, just a quick recap, which we have done before, I think, but just a recap on different things to do when different animals attack you. So when a shark attacks you, you put your upper body into its mouth and you attack its eyes.
Yeah.
Crocodile, you run in a zigzag.
Yeah.
Bears.
Grizzly bear, play dead.
If it's brown, lie down. If it's black, fight back. If it's white, good night.
Yeah.
If it's white, you just...
Yeah, forget
it's
it.
It's over.
Yeah. It's time to start your final slideshow. Enjoy
make
it.
Make your peace. Yeah.
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 If it's polar, say goodbye to your molars and everything else about your body. You're going to get turned into...
A scorpion.
Pop it in your mouth, but you then have to then wait. You then can't move until it dies of old age. So it has to then live out its life and die within your mouth.
Some of them live for hundreds of years, don't they?
Hundreds and hundreds of years, yeah. So it's, in a way, it's still a death sentence.
Pride of lions.
That's a tricky one. What I would do is, I think you
become a concubine.
You become a concubine.
It's the only way. You have to join the community, but you can't be a hunter. So what have you got to offer?
Yeah,
the odd orifice, really.
Your sweet ass.
Become a plaything. Yeah.
Eventually, it'll be a lovely sight. You'll be very, very happily frolicking amongst them, and people will come from miles around to take photos of you, using your arms and legs to toss off four of them at the same time. Because that'll be your currency in their community, won't it? So you'll have to get really good at that and keep it up. Koalas, machine gun. The only machine gun is that you just have to rake them in half with machine gun fire. That's the only thing that'll stop them.
Wolf pack.
Yes, wolf pack. I think sausages.
Poisoned sausages.
Poisoned sausages. No, I think wolf pack, your best bet is allow them to eat your lower body.
Mm-hmm.
And then just...
Declare an armistice.
And then declare an armistice.
Yeah. What about chimps? Big load of angry chimps.
I would do my... I've got a thing I used to do... which is I sort of wheel my fists, kind of windmills, just punch, 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 like that.
So similar to like a group of Tottenham fans, basically.
Similar to a group of Tottenham fans.
There's not much difference in the IQ, let me tell you.
No, I think Chimp says you've got to get your bot out, haven't you? Because it's botonomics, isn't it, with them? You've got to get your bot out and just
and get it as red as possible.
Oh, yeah, some of us are ready to go. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not worried about chimps.
Yeah. Is that because you already have
I've got a very warlike anus. Yeah.
Okay. It's very bellicose, is it? It's in a naturally bellicose state. Yeah.
I think, is it hippos are the biggest killer in Africa behind mosquitoes?
Of them. They're deadly, aren't they?
Yeah.
But I don't know what you do about a hippo.
I think there's nothing you can do. You
bury yourself?
Yeah. Although, of course, the most dangerous animal in Africa is actually
the Chinese government.
Isn't it? I think you'll find. Yeah. Because the way it's trying to get a sort of foothold there in as a way of rivaling American power through global influence.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
So, what are the biggest animal killers?
The deadliest animals to humans, Wikipedia. Here we go. Number one. Guess it. You'll know it.
Mosquito.
Mosquitoes.
Oh, very clever. Very, very clever. Yeah. Clever. Clever, clever, clever. Clever, clever, clever. Have you ever been mosquito caging? Cage mozzieing? Where you get in a cage and they put your
very
nexus.
Incredibly fine. So it's almost opaque.
It's the finest.
Mosquito can't get through it, right?
And then you wait and you wait and you wait and the mosquito will arrive. Eventually, if you're lucky, and it's absolutely terrifying to watch it, but magisterial to watch it as it goes. Come, mosquito caged-ing. Yeah, so mosquito, then what? Then it's actually fleas.
Humans killed per year, 1 million for mosquitoes. Well done.
Oof.
Number two, I don't think this counts as an animal, so I'll give this to you. Humans, brackets, homicides.
Yeah.
475,000 a year.
So humans are behind mosquitoes?
Yeah. Three, you can guess, maybe.
Hyenas.
No.
Snakes.
Snakes. 50,000.
Wow.
Next one.
Oh, I know what the next one is. One of the most fearsome and grotesque creatures on Earth. Utterly horrifying. Cold blood. Eyes that blink upwards and downwards and sideways. Rows and rows of fangs in their face. Mm-hmm. They breathe a form of gaseous acid.
Here he comes.
I'm talking about politicians.
Yeah.
I didn't mean an animal. not for politicians. I forgot to mention that they also have hooves and they hooves.
They shit.
And they trample their own young. Yeah. Politicians. There's more stuff about them being bad.
Dangerous dogs.
Dogs, yeah. Number four.
Dogs.
25,000 deaths a year.
God, do you realise a mosquito has part of its body called the costa?
That's just a trap, Henry.
Oh, no, that's how they lure you in.
That's how they've killed millions.
Through the costa.
Yeah.
They've also got a sub-costa.
Yeah, a pastry zone.
And a pastry zone.
Mm-hmm. Series of arcades.
Oh, damn, they're good.
Mm-hmm. And a wave machine.
Number five, kind of similar to number one. I have heard of these things.
Is it something parasitic?
Yes, they're an obligate parasite.
Pretty short hairs.
What a way to talk about Bluebell.
Bluebell.
They gradually kill you by siphoning all your wealth into their high-quality meat snacks.
Sorry?
A tapeworm or something?
It's a tsetse fly.
Oh, the tsetse fly.
Oh, the tsetse fly.
Number six is something you're never going to get, because I've never heard of it, called the assassin bug.
That sounds horrendous.
And then number seven is one that I don't think you'd get in a billion years.
Mm-hmm. Buffalo.
No.
Is it actually Dachshunds.
Grey squirrels.
It is freshwater snails.
What? No.
Yeah.
What?
How are they killing people?
I don't know. I think they transmit probably some kind of tropical disease, I would think.
They're little bastards.
8 is scorpions, 9 is roundworms, 10 is tapeworms.
So sharks are not even close, nowhere near this top 10, are they, sharks?
Nowhere near.
So I do take it back what I said about sharks being evil. They're obviously just animals responding to instinct, aren't they?
Top 10 most wanted. Do either of the rest of you occasionally just look at who the 10 most wanted are?
Yeah,
FBI.
Yeah.
Well,
animals?
No.
Well, it's the kind of it's like the Interpol top most
Interpol
wanted list,
top 10
it?
And FBI. Yeah.
Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah.
Who's on
the
it at
National
the moment?
Crime Agency. Or, yeah.
Mm.
Who's on it at the moment?
I don't know, but I just to remind them that there's something I occasionally absentmindedly will have a look at.
They're usually kind of Mexican drug people, aren't they?
There's usually Mexican drug people and a couple of paedophiles. It's never as good as you want it to be.
No.
There's never a jackal, you know?
Well, one of them on the, I'm looking now on the FBI's top 10.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people who look like they're probably involved in the Mexican drug trade.
Yeah.
Arnaldo Jimenez, for example.
Yeah.
But one of them is Dr. Ruja.
Oh, of OneCoin.
Of OneCoin fame.
Yeah, nice. Still missing then.
Yeah.
Well.
That's a big recommendation from me. What's it called?
Crypto Queen or something?
Yes, yeah. The Missing Crypto Queen is a BBC podcast that's really great about this woman called Dr. Ruja.
Yeah.
We've had this email from Rob in Stockholm.
Oh, hello, Rob.
In response to our episode about mushrooms, which was recent, my late grandmother had two facts that she would repeat whenever the circumstances presented themselves.
I like the sound of this woman.
Number one, mushroom soil has been sterilized.
Hmm.
I don't know what that means.
So we talked about the sort of black soil you get on a mushroom.
Oh, yes.
And her contention was that it's been sterilized. So that's really changing the game for me.
Oh, so you cannot impregnate, you cannot get pregnant from it. Does that mean? No. What does that mean?
But that is no protection against herpes.
Well, why not just clean it off rather than sterilise it? I mean, I'd rather have no shit on something rather than some sterile shit on it.
I'm confused. Are they saying that that big agriculture has sterilised it, or are they saying that some weird fungus thing has meant that all of the bacteria have been consumed by the fungus at the surface of the mushroom, which can't be true?
I was imagining that they are grown in sterilised soil, which somehow sterilised. Be boiled soil?
Sounds like a lot of work, doesn't it?
So does that mean you can basically eat it? That is quite good knowledge to have. You don't have to freak out about cleaning it off.
If this is real, this is big, because I'm never cleaning a mushroom again.
I don't think it is. It sounds like Rob's grandma is trying to dodge fussy eaters and got sick of cleaning mushrooms.
Ah, okay. Yes.
I think Rob's grandma knew that that the harm would be minimal. Stop making a fuss, eat your mushrooms.
I mean, her second fact.
Yeah.
Prunella Scales wore a wig.
That's great. That's a really good scurrilous rumour. And in her generation at that time would have been really hot stuff as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
These days, people are like, oh, right, okay. I'm sure she's had a reason for that, if that's true.
Yeah.
That must have been very difficult for Prunella Scales. Whereas back in the day, that would have been, ho, we're going to ruin her.
Rob says, I have not checked the veracity of these claims, but have no reason to doubt them. And they provide great comfort whenever I, A, eat a hastily cleaned mushroom, or B, look enviously at Sybil Fawlty's perfectly coiffured hair.
Yeah.
Thanks, Robin Stockham.
Thanks, Robin Stockham, and thanks to Rob's grandma.
Yeah. By the way, just because something's sterile also doesn't mean you should eat it, does it? Because you wouldn't eat sterile needles, for example, would you? Or
scalpels.
Or scalpels.
We talked about how piss is sterile recently.
Yeah.
On our Patreon episode.
Yeah. So sterility is only half the story.
But then some people didn't like that. They emailed us about saying that sometimes it's not sterile.
No.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So don't, you know.
Don't drink your own piss.
Don't drink.
If you take anything from this podcast, don't let it be drinking your own piss.
We have never marketed ourselves as a lifestyle solutions podcast.
No.
What has two wings?
Here we go.
A tail and a prick at the front.
Mike, when he's dressed up Pam as a little angel. You sat on top of her for the school nativity play.
I was going to say, it's an aeroplane piloted by Mike.
Why has it got, it has got wings, hasn't it?
Yeah. There are so many options. Why not write in and send in your own Mike's a prick punchline? On the Patreon chat.
I don't think you're a prick, Mike. It's just a bit of fun.
It's just a bit of fun.
Hang on. Didn't you once play a airline pilot in an advert for Virgin?
No, I was a dad. I was a dad waiting. I was a punter.
Ah.
The pilots had to be like sort of lantern jawed and sleek and muscular.
But I think Mike out of the three of us could rock the pilot look. I mean, it's not even
but
close.
Not budget airline.
They were going for high end type stuff.
Yeah,
they're not going for the like sort of 70s doing the hop from Seattle to the Yukon kind of thing. Everyone can smoke and all that kind of stuff. It's not that kind of vibe at all.
Anyway, here's more stuff from our episode about budget airlines.
You betcha.
So, Ryanair. I've had the classic experience on Ryanair once, which is it's almost so classic that it's like a cliche. But I have had the thing once of having to take loads of stuff, take loads of clothes out of my bag and put all of the clothes on.
Oh,
because of the bonus charges.
Because of the bonus charges.
Charges all the way. I mean, it's to the point where, you could be halfway across the Med and they were like, by the way, you will need to pay another £75 to get to Tripoli. Sorry.
You've only paid to breathe out during this flight. So by all means, go for a long, slow whistle like that dead guy in the corner there. You can go for the long, slow whistle out or you can pay the bonus for the breathing in. So I did the thing of having to put on all my jumpers. Mm. I like layers at the best times. I had all the jumpers, and I was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And all my novels, my holiday novels. I had all these huge, fat holiday novels that I had to then shove in my pockets. That was quite traumatic. I think since then, that was in front of everyone, obviously, in the queue.
And when you were doing it, did you do it in quite an indignant way? Like, I mean, it's all coming on the plane. I'll just have to wear it all. Huh?
Yeah.
Huh? You just want me to wear it all, do you? Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a cool guy. Yeah.
You're exactly. Sticking it to the man.
I'm sticking it to the man.
So it wasn't pitiful?
Nothing about it was pitiful. That's the last thing anyone was thinking of. And just to underline that point, I actually told people this isn't pitiful, is it? As I was saying that to people as I was doing it.
It's quite hard to achieve pitiful in Luton Airport, given how pitiful the general vibe is. But you can still do it.
The bar is incredibly low. But there is something inherently pitiful about one's own pants and clothes, even though there's nothing, yes. I didn't have any strap-on dildos, I didn't have any rubberized
ass clamps.
Just layer upon layer of Y-front over your Bermuda shorts.
Exactly, but there's something about... It's something pathetic, isn't it? But I'm just a pathetic human being that needs to wear little soft fabrics around his mid area. There's something sort of pathetic about
it. It is, yeah. But also the thing I feel on Ryanair is that the seats are so aggressively wipe clean.
That's so true.
Do you know what I mean? There's something about it where it's like they just think you're an animal and you're probably going to piss yourself.
Yeah. Will you pop a little mini bottle of wine or a mini Heineken on a plane? Some people I know always do that on a plane. It's their little thing, a little treat, no matter what time of day it is.
Yeah, the problem is it's normally early in the morning. I would feel totally disgusting. There's nothing wrong with it, of course, but I
still have a little part of me as the child part of me, which still quite likes. I know some people hate it, but I quite like the airplane meal. I like the fact
same,
that
always,
trays,
yeah. It's got yeah. little still, bits to open. This day, even though it's gross, I find it quite fun.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. It's compartmentalised. Yes. Something that's shite,
yeah.
by breaking it into little compartments, it somehow made
I'm
it
entertained. Yeah,
made it a little bit better.
Yes, and it's sort of like it's a four course meal if the biscuit is counted separately, and great fun.
When is the cheese and the biscuit supposed to be deployed? That's an old question.
Part of the fun, isn't it? You can you can mix it up.
And also, what exactly was that dessert? It's another question that's never been answered.
It was related to a blancmange in some way.
It's somehow related to blancmange. It was a kind of squared off.
Technically, have been
compacted,
a blancmange.
Compacted, squared off blancmange. Mm.
You know that kind of childlike enjoyment of the whole experience.
Mm.
Yeah,
I felt myself crossing some kind of Rubicon this year, when I took a flight from Edinburgh to Cardiff and had no joy of any sort. Like, I just saw it as a ball ache.
That's a shame.
For the first time in my life, I was like, this is just a ball ache and quite awful. And I feel terrible. It's early in the morning. It's busy. It's not very nice.
Must have been quite mercifully brief, though, presumably.
Yeah. But I sort of realised that I think every flight before that, even if it was just 1%, I still had some childlike wonder left that I was about to get on a plane, we were about to fly in the sky, and that it was quite exciting. You don't do it very often. Then you go to duty free and it's like, oh, this is fun. I can squirt some perfume on. There's like lots of fun little bits.
Yeah. And you look out the window and you see it's a marshmallow kingdom.
Yeah.
I'm floating. I'm king of the marshmallow universe. And you're looking out the water and you're just going, fucking water droplets, fucking calculated water droplets.
Can still see the M6.
Yeah, still see the M6. It's going to take a lot more than these fucking water droplets to clean the M6.
But I think it's, I just realised that this is the first one where I've just, that's all gone now. I just think it's a ball ache. And I felt quite sad.
The trouble is, if the airport's too small, there's no fun. Like, Exeter's got an airport. It's absolutely minuscule. There's no fun to be had at the airport at all. It's absolutely basic. It's the minimum stuff.
Yeah, so maybe it was too...
You're not in a sort of retail palace.
No.
With a mega food court.
And you're not leaving the country, I think.
Maybe it was that.
You're not changing, you're not flying to a different world. Because my flight to and from Sri Lanka, I went on holiday recently, was quite magical in terms of looking out of the window and going... I actually thought everything to myself. I know Ben Partridge would just see water droplets here, you know, cold, dead water droplets. Whereas I am seeing a marshmallow kingdom. I did marvel at the beauty of it. And like just really going to the other side of the planet, that was pretty cool. I enjoyed. And also on the way back, I had quite a weird experience. Basically, it's an 11-hour flight. I sat next to, so I was on the window seat. Yeah. Next to me was a woman between me and the aisle. Yeah. She didn't go for a piss once in 11 hours. She raw dogged it hard.
That's amazing.
So I managed to do that entire flight with just one toilet trip, which I'm quite pleased about. But I kept on waiting for her to go. She never went.
Was she crying tears of piss?
I thought it was just she was reacting to Marley and me, but I think it was. I think it may have been tears of piss, yeah.
Did you watch any films on the flight?
I did watch films on the flight. So I watched... See what you think of my film choices. Mm-hmm. So I watched four films.
Mm, good haul.
On a long flight, films are... I'd forgotten this. It's been a long time since I've done a really long flight, but films are brilliant for eating up the time. Mm-hmm. You've just got to go with films. It's the only way. I mean, obviously, I love novels and prose. I mean, to me...
And tone poems.
I love tone poetry.
On a coach trip, yes, tone poetry, of course.
Tone poetry. Yeah. So if I could have... I would have loved nothing more than to have just been sucking on the sweet, sweet, you know, cerebral teat that is... Shakespeare's sonnet sequences. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to, but nothing more to them reading sonnets, but they were unfortunately, my sonnets were all in my rucksack. They're in the overhead locker and the woman wasn't moving. So I thought it was easy to just watch four films.
Are you mixing up the genres of your films?
I was, yeah.
Let's hear it.
So I went with...
Yeah, take us through it.
So first of all, I watched a film which I'd had recommended to me called First Goal Wins.
Is that a Taika Waititi film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it.
It's probably quite a good feel-good kind of factor.
Really good feel-good film. Next Goal Wins, sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really good feel-good film. It's got Fassbender in it, playing a light-hearted role.
Okay.
It's very silly. Quite, you know, light fare. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've cut your arm off for a bloody copy of the Karamazov Brothers at that point, obviously, but... Because I actually find words easier than images. I mean, I prefer reading. I find reading is watching a film.
But you're the director.
But I'm the director.
And you also play all the parts.
And I play all the parts, exactly.
Your Anna Karenina was just...
My Anna Karenina was unbelievable. Now, I see books as an entirely subtitled film. Then I watched a film called Live, Die, Repeat.
Good, very good film.
Absolutely brilliant. Yep. Do you know about this?
No, I've never heard of it.
So it's a sort of time...
Emily Blunt and Tom Cruise.
Time travel, kind of alien war time travel. Really good.
Okay.
I then watched which I think you're not going to believe this, for the first time in my life, Home Alone.
Get it Christmassy. Get the Christmas feeling going.
I think I could have had 850 guesses and I still wouldn't have got Home Alone.
I'd never seen Home Alone. I was like, I'm going to watch Home Alone.
Did you enjoy it?
I quite liked Home Alone. I think,
I'm going to say mid to late 40s probably isn't the time to first intersect with it as a film. I've tried and intersect earlier.
On your way home from a summer holiday.
Yeah. Desperately, desperately needing a piss. I really liked it. I've got a slight problem with them, with the film Home Alone. They're just, which is, the setup was really good. So he's in this big family, there's loads of them. You know the film?
Yeah.
They're all going on holiday. He gets left behind.
Is it a safeguarding concern?
No.
Okay.
Don't give a shit. Not my problem.
Fine.
So yeah, he feels a bit left out in this family because there's so many of them. He's not getting enough attention and stuff. And he's kind of like, all the older siblings make fun of him and stuff. Then he wishes he wants to stay at home. Or no, he wishes to never have a family. I wish I'd never had a family or whatever. So then this thing happens, which is a brilliant idea for a kid to imagine what would be like if it didn't have my family, just me. It's a brilliant idea. And then halfway through the film, the way he comes up with solutions and stuff to the problems of the robbers is he's amazingly good at contraptions. He's brilliant at contraptions. He makes those contraptions. He's brilliant at contraptions. It's all about contraptions. He makes incredible contraptions. Is that fair? Like, why is he good at contraptions?
Didn't like the Heath Robinson angle?
Well, I just came out of nowhere, just suddenly, oh, this kid is incredible at contraptions. No one's mentioned contraptions.
Yeah.
There's nothing to do with contraptions. And then suddenly the whole film is just contraptions.
Yeah.
Like, he's got the entire dinner party of, like, made of contraptions of people going around on roller skates and stuff. Like, where the fuck
is he? He's a natural born weapons engineer genius.
Yeah, but it's just not set up in any way. Anyway, but apart from that, strong film.
So would it be stronger if, like, at the beginning, all his brothers and sisters were like, Kevin, why are you so obsessed with making contraptions all the time, you loser? Is that what you were after?
It's now a 5-star film.
Okay.
Yeah, it's gone from 3 to 5 stars with that. I think so. I think that's literally all it needs, just to have a bit of... Because why is he incredible at contraptions? I mean, he's not just good at contraptions, he's absolutely incredible at contraptions.
And devious, sadistic.
And devious and sadistic, yeah. But all those things weren't really set out, anyway.
Yes, we should have seen him reading a book about siege weapons and stuff, shouldn't we? And
other
kids' toys falling apart because he's pinched a sprocket from out of something.
Exactly.
Or maybe we should have seen that he was born on the same day that Rube Goldberg died.
Yes,
Rube Goldberg.
Lovely.
I know who Rube Goldberg is, exactly. That's why I like it as an idea.
He's the American Heath Robinson.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
How do I not know that?
How do you not know Rube Goldberg?
You'd be into it.
Is he an illustrator?
He was also the founding member and first president of the National Cartoonist Society.
There we go.
Oh, my God.
He's your guy.
He's right up your street, Henry.
I do. I'm looking at it. I like it. I mean, I do love Heath Robinson. Oh, that is brilliant.
So, yeah, next film.
I'm trying to remember what the other film was.
It was number 4.
I think
so. What have we had? What is next going? Is that like a coming of age thing? Something.
It's about the international football team of a small island nation in the Pacific. Underdog story.
So we've got sporting movie. We've got
sports underdogs.
Action adventure. We've got family comedy.
Yeah,
what's next? Biopic?
I hate biopics.
So it wasn't going to be a biopic. What else is there? Musical?
I quite like musicals, but I didn't think it was musical. What was it?
Kitchen sink drama. A really worthy Mike Lee film. Finish off your holiday.
No, it wasn't those. I was by myself, so there was no one to be impressed by it.
Yeah, so there's absolutely no reason to watch a Mike Lee film.
Literally, you've taken away the reason for Mike Lee to exist. Mike Lee's just gone poof. Disappeared into thin air. And what's that I can see behind him? It's the face of Tom Cruise.
It's Jerry Bruckheimer.
He's hoving into view. He's on a motorbike. But I tell you one thing which did happen that was quite funny, which is this happens on flights. Mm. It's a famous thing about flights. I don't know why, but you end up watching other people's...
At the same time.
A no-dialogue, like Harry Potter film for most of the flight. Yeah. For a lot of the time, I was fascinated by this no-dialogue. Yeah. And also, it was quite funny, it's the woman next to me started watching Home Alone and never credited me. We both know this isn't a coincidence, love. There's no way we've both chosen Home Alone, but I got no credit. Because she obviously looked over and went, that's a good idea, watch Home Alone.
It's not only a good idea, but there would be some people who might be embarrassed about watching Home Alone on their own at a certain age on a flight.
Yeah.
They feel like, well, that weird bloke's done it.
That weird bloke's done it. It's given me permission.
I wouldn't do it. And good on you. And good on you particularly for not seeking that credit. That's what's most noble about that story.
That is noble, isn't it?
Yeah. And not kind of bringing it up later like it's...
Something as petty as that would not have dated me for all these months, would it? Just a little nod wouldn't have hurt.
My best ever plain film experience was I was watching the film Heat with Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, which is a fun film anyway.
It's one of Mike's favourite films.
It's a tremendous film.
Mike loves it. Good film.
Anyway, that film finishes with a sort of gunfight between the two of them in LAX airport on the runway.
Yeah.
And as I landed at LAX airport, I was watching that happen as I landed on the set of the film I was watching.
Yes.
It was perfect that you couldn't, like, it felt like God himself had engineered this situation for me.
That is amazing.
It was like I was landing in the film I was watching. It was absolutely insane. That's
wonderful. And then you were straight out into the grit of LA.
That's right.
And like Los Angeles, the city of angels.
And you're like, I need to solve some crime.
Yeah.
or do some crime.
Or do some.
Or do some crimes. Yeah. Or both. Yeah.
It was so good.
Nice.
Do you have the thing where this is quite a well-known phenomenon? I think it's probably mainly down to the fact you're tired.
Hmm.
But that films like hit harder on a plane.
Emotionally.
You're more likely to cry at a film. Yeah, definitely.
I got
film will feel amazing somehow.
I did watch Marley and Me on a plane, and I did find it quite emotionally.
There you go.
It's quite hard hitting.
Is that an established thing?
It's not a good film.
It's definitely it's definitely a phenomenon. Yeah,
is it?
Yeah. I don't really sort of cry at films. I've cried on planes at films.
Well, there's something, isn't it, emotionally affecting about having a dialogue scene that's interrupted by "Please secure your belts" and "Ding ding." That's quite annoying, isn't it?
Also, that annoying thing where you are coming into land, you've got like 20 minutes of the film left. You think you've probably got about 10 minutes of flight left, but you're not sure when they're going to turn off the actual.
Merciless. Yeah. The way they turn it off. Yeah.
They could absolutely let you finish. I don't know that I had that. Also, the films I'm probably not watching the right films for the emotional impact on a flight.
Okay.
And the ones that will set me off are the ones that actually with happy endings rather than tragedy. A really, really gushy happy ending will set me a blubbing like a fool. Tragedy, I'm like ice.
On a plane or just in general?
Generally.
In general, yeah.
So what's an example of a film with a happy ending that would get you going?
Probably the cheesier, the better, really.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what's
the Mighty Ducks are national champions.
There we go, classic. There we go, right there. Yeah, absolutely in pieces.
I was quite emotionally affected at the end of Home Alone, actually, to be fair. When he's reunited with
his mother
and mum and stuff.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, she's very good in that.
The Transformers have overcome whoever the Transformers are dealing with. I think it's other Transformers, is it? I'm not sure.
Deadpool did have the last laugh.
Thanks for listening to Extra Beans.
Thank you. And thank you for your support.
Thank you for your support. And we'll see you again next time
here
on Extra Beans.
And for those of you that just listen to Extra Beans and not the main beans, what's going on with that?
What's going on with you?
What's going on with you? What is that?